that I now know, we've been looking, last week we started looking at the chart that I gave where he has primeval history on there. And he has four different realms of primeval history that are covered within the book of Genesis. The creation, the fall, the flood, and the Tower of Babel. And then underneath it is patriarchal history, where we have four outstanding individuals that are referenced there: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Last week we covered the creation and the fall. Tonight I want to look at the flood a little bit. I don't know if I'll get into the Tower of Babel. I don't really want to spend a lot of time on the Tower of Babel anyway. I do want to spend a little bit of time on the flood, though. So, if you want to turn to Genesis 6, Genesis chapter 6, and in Genesis 6, we read verse 1. Genesis 6, verse 1. And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the ground, and daughters were born to them, that sons of Elohim see the daughters of men that they are beautiful, and they take to themselves women of all whom they have selected. So Yahweh said, My spirit will not remain in mankind to the eon, since they are flesh. They will remain for 120 more years. And the Nephilim were on the land in those days, and even afterwards, when the sons of Elohim were having sexual relations with the daughters of humankind, who gave birth to their children. They are the heroes who are from the Eon, the men of name. I want to stop there for a second. In Genesis 6:1, there's a number of things that we're told that are really important. The first thing is, we're told that men began to multiply, and that there's an increase in the numbers of people on the planet. In chapter 2, we're introduced to the term sons of God or sons of Elohim. And they're looking at women, and they're seeing them, and they understand that they're beautiful, and they decide to take for themselves these women. And basically, it's for the purpose of having children. I'm going to talk about these giants, which is the Latin word that would be used. The Greek gigantes would be the word in the Septuagint. In the Hebrew, it's Nepha. Or Nephilim, right, and that literally is an important term too. So we'll look at that in some detail hopefully later. I want to cover first is because of these beings that there's a judgment that's going to be pronounced, and the judgment is that God is going to destroy all the flesh of man, not just the flesh of man though, but he's going to go down and. And he's looking and he sees that everything has corrupted its way. Verse 5, for instance. And Yahweh saw that the wickedness of man was great in the land, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart only wicked continually. So we see that there's a thinking that has come into man, and it's wicked. In verse 6, we see that God repented, which is a nice word, because again, it shows that God can change his mind, that everything with God isn't etched in stone, that he has the ability to think and to reason and to adjust and act accordingly. And we see that it also grieves God, what he sees going on. Now, we're introduced to Noah in verse 8. Somebody could read verse 8 down through... told some information about Noah too. He finds grace in the eyes of the Lord. How does he find grace? Because he's considered a righteous man. Why is he considered a righteous man? Because he's perfect in one. His generation. It's interesting because in verses 1 through 3 we see a corruption that begins with the sons of God and the daughters of man. And they're not right or just in their generations. We'll look at that again in a little bit. But Noah is. And for that reason, God is going to spare Noah and his wife and his children and his children's wife. Okay, so that's the reason why Noah is finding grace in the eyes of the Lord, though. God sees Noah. His lineage has not been corrupted yet. And he's going to wipe out man except for Noah and his lineage. He's going to keep that, preserve that. Right. Right.
I am.
Right. Now, it's interesting. It's interesting in verse 4, you also have something that's of note that's there. Somebody have a King James.
Verse 4?
Verse 4, if you could read that.
There was giants, there was in those days, and also after that, and the God has given up others of men. If there are children, one pursued them, they became mighty men, were of old, men of renown.
Now, the phrase I want to focus on is that phrase, after that. Right? Now, it's funny because we look at it and we understand this idea of the Nephilim, and we understand that with the Nephilim that they were the reason for the flood to be given in the first place. But there's going to be an outbreak of them after the flood as well when we read that verse. There were on the land in those days and even afterwards is the way it's rendered in what I'm reading here. So it's kind of interesting when you look at that. There's going to be an outbreak afterwards, and again, we do see an outbreak after the flood. A second attempt to recreate what occurred here. And we do see that. For instance, in the book of Numbers in chapter 13, we have Og, king of Bashan. You have the Anak. Right, you have Raphaim, and all of those individuals are traced back to this, which is kind of an interesting thing. So there's a recreation for it. Job chapter 1 and verse 6.
was a day when the sons of God was possessed by the people of the Lord. Satan was also among them.
You know, the sons of God are coming to present themselves among the Lord, to the Lord, and Satan is also with them, right? Now, who is coming to present themselves before the Lord then? Well, the sons of God.
God of this world.
Well, Satan would be the God of this world. Right. Really, who it would be, because worse God, I guess, would be the question for us to ask in the book itself, in the beginning of the book.
Where is he?
Isn't heaven. So you have these beings called the sons of God who are coming to God, right? And you have Satan, who's also with them, and they're presenting themselves before the Lord. So that would make these angelic beings, right? Let's go to another verse in Job, Job chapter 2, and verse 1. So again, we have something very similar to chapter 1, verse 6, right? Sons of God, again, is a very clear reference to the angelic being. Look at Job 38 and verse 7. Foundations of the earth were laid in the preceding verse. So what we understand is that these beings were present when the foundations of the earth were being laid. They're, very clearly, this is a term that's used of angelic beings. And we also know from the book of Jude, we don't necessarily have to go there, but from the book of Jude, we understand that there is some angelic beings that kept not their first estate. But what were they guilty of? Going after strange flesh. And the idea is that they went after that strange flesh in the same way that Sodom and Gomorrah did. In other words, they defied what was the natural use to go to something unnatural. They should have had no natural use, and that's where the defilement takes place. The whole idea that you're getting at is that this is the result of these fallen angelic beings who have now joined themselves with men to produce children. Now, why would they do that? With women, mankind. What people always say is they can't because they're not given in marriage. But the reason they're not given in marriage is we never read of a female angel. You never read anywhere in Scripture where there's ever in their spirit being. Right. That's correct. They're holy angels, and they're in heaven, and they kept their first estate. These are unholy angels who have not kept their first estate. Or they would have had to have possessed the person in some way, shape, or form.
Brought that up, and I was thinking, but that's not necessarily so. Some of these angels are not created.
And they are, because we see that with Sodom and Gomorrah when they come to
those are the holy.
That's correct. But they
say the higher rank.
But they have the ability to take human form.
That's
right. they are capable of sexual relations because the people of Sodom want to have relations with them.
It was both like this.
Right. I know, here's why it can work. Here's why it can work. Mankind was intended to at some point function well. In the heavens. In fact, the body of Christ is a heavenly being, heavenly creature, is what we are. So we're intended to have a body similar to theirs in that sense, where it can function in that realm. I think we're a lot closer than most scholars would allow. Because again, they always picture angels and they have this faulty idea of them. We don't read of angels with wings. We read of seraphim and cherub with wings, but not angels. They always picture them with long flowing hair that's blonde and they're a woman. But you never read that.
You bring that
as
a good point, though, about what we're about to force them up.
Right.
But we were made a little lower
than angels.
Right.
For just a while.
Very focused and relaxed.
Right.
So they made it very attractive.
That's correct.
As in the case of some of the floors.
Right. And that's kind of, again, how I would see it. I think, you know, there's a lot more similarity than we think. Well, there's two things Satan's trying to get at here. He's trying to create subjects for himself. But the other thing is he wants to defile the seed.
Co-opt
the bloodline. And the way to do that is to breed it out of existence. Anybody ever see the movie Braveheart?
Yeah.
Remember in the beginning of that when the king decides, well, we're going to breed the Scots out of existence. Passes that law where the nobles could have the right of the first night of the marriage, and they would assume their right and take that bride, and I'm sure there were a lot of kids produced that way. And the idea was that we would breed the Scots out of existence. Well, Satan had the same plan. We're going to take that bloodline away before it can ever get established. So you have that idea that's going on there. Now, the other thing that's interesting, nobody ever asks why did God have to have a nation like Israel? And what was one of its main purposes? Because God gives them the land of Canaan, right? Why Canaan? Why didn't he give them the land of Japheth? Well, we know Canaan was cursed, right? But why is it that Canaan is the land of interest? Why doesn't he say expand it to other areas? Because there's a lot of other... Well, the main... It is, but there's another reason behind it. If you go to chapter 14, Genesis 14, and verse 5, somebody could read that.
And in the 14th year came Pharaoh the Omer, and the kings that were with him smote the Rephaim and Ashtaroth, Canaan, and the Jews, and Ham, and Heman, and Shapha.
So everybody knows why I didn't want to read that one. The whole point I want to get at here, though, the whole reason I wanted to get to this verse is
wine.
the name Rephaim, right? Yeah, right? Who are they?
Giants.
Yeah. They're the giants. Now, where are they? They're in these lands that I'm not going to touch.
Where is this? Where is Rephaim?
Okay, they're from the children of Rapha. If you want an actual passage on that, you could go to go to Deuteronomy 10 for a second. Want to read that? Deuteronomy 2:10. Okay, now who's the Emi? That's where the Raphim are. And that's one of the things that John had just read. It's that idea. Now remember, they were the guys that they were tall, they were giants. That's the word used, by the way. It would be gigantes in Greek. And it's that same people that are in Genesis 6. They're those tall beings, right? And we see that's one of the lands here that's being referenced. Back in Genesis chapter 15, okay, Genesis 15, look at verse 20. Verses 19, I'll actually read verses 19 through 21. There's 10 nations mentioned here. This is a confederation. I believe these are the individuals that will comprise the 10-nation confederacy out in the book of Revelation. But it says in verse 19, the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kedemonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. Who's in the land of Canaan? All these people, including these giants. They again tried to restart up the rebellion that they were doing back in Genesis chapter 6 at some point later on. If you go through the book of Numbers, for instance, they send out the spies, and Og is out there, and they have, they're giants, and we're like grasshoppers to them, and all of this other thing. The Raphims are mentioned over and over again, all through chapter 13 of Numbers. And Israel is told to annihilate them, to totally obliterate them, to destroy them and leave none of them alive. Not even, they're to go in and just wipe them off the face of the earth. Why? Because that's what God did to them back in Genesis 6. They were trying to destroy the bloodline. And that's the stronghold. Canaan is the place where this is running rampant after the flood. Before the flood, you have all of this stuff going on as well. I want to talk about some of the specifics on the flood for a few minutes.
People are doing. I mean, where did it come up with these names? Who? I mean, they're so different.
Mm-hmm.
His name is...
Right.
Where they're like, be a physical teacher, that their name is
referred
to,
right.
Like, maybe a father's head, or, you know,
right.
So,
you know. Well, the word, for instance, Raphim, literally means son of Rapha. That's what the name means.
What's
Rapha? It's like in English, for instance, different names have different meanings, like John, son of John.
I found that
Well, Raphim literally means son of Rapha.
Rapha? What's Rapha?
Well, sure.
But it says earlier that Bundle's name is Olamite's
word. Right.
It says that one of the passages.
Right.
The
and there's a number of different languages, and languages, unfortunately, different languages and different cultures have very strange names. Like
well, a lot of these in there, when you read that Genesis 14, verse 5.
Using, right, as an IM
after a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Or Santa. Yeah. Like white dart.
Dart.
D-A-R-T. Yeah. So, I mean, there's...
You would love that. Yeah, you could love that. Yeah. I thought that this one has my but it died.
Methuselah literally means son of a dart, and this actually taken from three different ones. Scott Lytle, Scott Lytle, the Thomas Sayer.
Yeah, I know that.
Well, it's just from the origins of the name.
Yeah, I know.
6,000 years ago,
you know you're going to be a giant. Right.
in the book of Exodus, we're going to have some accounts given about the plagues, right? Now, in the book of Exodus, when you have the accounts of the plagues, we're told in Exodus 10 and verses 5 down through, say, verse 10 through verse 15. Somebody could read that. Exodus 10, verses 5 through 15.
Of all the earth.
This is saying on the face of the land. Why? It's Greek. It's the Hebrew word eretz, and literally it means land. Go down with me a little bit further. Verse 4. Somebody want to read that?
For yet 7 days, I will cause you to bring upon earth 40 days, according to
okay, the word face of the earth there, okay, literally is the same word that's translated that in chapter 2 of Genesis, where Adam was formed from the ground. It should be translated ground or soil, dirt. And this translation reads it this way. For in 7 days I will send rain on the land 40 days and 40 nights, and every living thing that I have made I will blot out from the face of the ground. Okay? It's a different word. Uh-huh. It literally means Adama. That's where Adam took his name from. It means soil or dirt or ground. Going down a little further, the same word Adama is used in verse 8. Somebody wants to read that.
Mm-hmm. They have beasts that are not clean, of fowl, and of everything that creeps.
Again, it would be Adama or ground. Okay, coming down a little bit further in the passage, you're going to see the word Eretz used again. Verse 18, verse 17 and 18. Eretz is used in both of those. The King James will translate both of them as earth. Okay? Verse 17 reads this way in this translation. The flood continued throughout the land for 40 days while the flood waters increased, lifting the ark so that it rose above the surface of the land. Verse 18. The flood waters continued to surge, increasing throughout the land, while the ark floated on the surface of the flood water. In other words, the idea is the land. Now, there's another word here that's a critical word for us to understand as well, while I'm looking at this. In verse 20, somebody want to read that in King James? Chapter 7. Okay. The word mountains there is the Hebrew word har. It's the Hebrew word har. H-A-R. Okay. Want to hear what that word means? Uplands, elevated area, hill.
Elevated ground.
Right. Now this is what this is what this translation has. The flood waters rose 22 and a half feet above the high hills.
Right?
No, the mountains weren't covered.
But why do you hear ministers on the radio saying, the whole world is covered and it's only this?
Right. Well, the reason for that is because it contradicts their theology.
Well, how can you teach anything from the Bible that's not in the Bible?
Well, you have to understand that when they're sent to seminary, it's not sent to learn the Bible, it's sent to learn their denominational view. And they're good at teaching their denomination. But that's why. They have a theological bias, and they interpret everything through their theological bias. Right. Well, 22 and a half feet. I want to put this in perspective, right? 22 and a half feet. There was a flood in 1876. This was out of a newspaper from London, England. Okay. It involved the Bay of Bengal. Right.
it was actually a flood with a tidal wave that came in. Right. It covered 141 square miles. The water was 45 feet above its normal level. Right. And 250,000 people died. Now, stop and think about that. That's more than twice the height of what you have recorded in Genesis, and it only affected 141 miles. Now, think about that. Right. It was a tidal wave.
That was not caused by 40 days.
40 days and 40 nights. Let's hold on now. Which rose 22 and a half feet.
Right.
22 and a half feet. Hold on.
Higher than the high ground.
Higher than the high ground.
I don't think we should verify it, but
we should.
This is a big deal.
It went up 22 and a half feet, right?
Yeah.
How high is Mount Himalaya? 22 and a half feet ain't getting you to the top.
No, it's beyond the top. Not necessarily the Himalayan mountains. We think it's a regional thing, which right. Okay, we'll grant that.
Right.
But if it's higher than even the foothills of Mount Ararat, the Ararat range, right. Yeah, way up there. It's 22 feet higher. The whole point is that all these people scrambling for their lives in their kayaks and wiki up the dugouts and all that were obliterated. So there was no respite for them. I think the point is there really are no high mountains in that area. That's the point alone is 2,000 feet higher than the Dead Sea. It was enough water to kill all life in the area. It wasn't high enough to cover the face of the earth like most people assume that the flood of Noah.
Well,
again, it rests on mountains. is the way the King James literally, well, it butchers it because the word is plural there. It's actually har, but it's the plural form of har, and it literally should be the hills of Ararat. Is the way it should be. Could be anywhere. We don't know. It's probably not even in existence anymore. Why would it have to be?
Who would take the mountains away?
I'm talking about the Ark.
Oh, okay.
Right.
If they say they got it up there, but they're not able to produce.
Yeah. Because they're looking for it up high, and it most likely isn't. Good couple of points. They're looking totally wrong. You know, that's a really interesting book that anyone could actually read off our website. We have a link to it. It's Arthur Houston's Doorway Papers. Click it. You can go to right to the thing. But having said that, the whole idea is that the only thing that flood has to do is to kill all life other than the ones that are in the ark. So wherever that life is where the flood is. It doesn't have to go beyond that.
Okay.
Their life after the flood. After the flood. It did work for a time, but what happened is it was restarted again. Perfect. protection, but what else do they do with population? It limits how much you expand out. Because a city keeps population in a dense area. Right? And this, the record that we continually read in early Genesis is this person established this city, this person established that city. You know, so
that's why, you know, not getting ahead of this way, fellow Babel and the separation.
Yeah.
Like they're all thinking of the other. We have to see imagination. You can't be allies of others, otherwise, we're being done. You are going to be the afraid.
That's true.
We have to cover this all. Why is all this?
I believe, again, I think it's twofold. In chapter 6, verse 11, if you want to read that.
The earth also was corrupt before God.
The earth is filled with violence. I believe what was happening is an animal can be trained to be very violent. And an animal can be trained to do things that are against its nature. For instance, bestiality is one side effect of it. But there's other things that animals can be trained to do that it wouldn't normally do. That's a perversion of what the animal is intended to be. And I think those things were going on. The end result was you could be training them to attack people. You could be training them to wage wars.
Animals trained elephants to wage wars.
Sure.
They have been able to do the same with bears.
Right. You know, I think that's the whole point. And I do believe, again, I think there was the idea of where we read of the rampant sexual perversion that's going on there. I think there was some of that with the animals as well. Well, again, we don't read anywhere that they have spread out of where man is, away from man. Yeah. We don't read that they're not where man is. It doesn't mean it's not that we don't know.
That the ecosystem were advanced to drive above the earth. Man was already here. Remember what you do? All flesh is not corrupted.
Well, we do know, let me correct you there. We do know that man wasn't in the
ecosystem. Oh, of course. No, the ecosystem.
Right.
But the ecosystem, the animals function without it.
Maybe.
If you have one creature, you have to have this counterbalance. Make everything work perfectly.
And I think the ecosystem was all in one region. It hasn't spread out yet.
There are animals that are germane, specifically, say, Australia. Maybe more things that don't
now.
Same thing in
and that's true today, but that wasn't true. That wasn't true necessarily then. Because the climate was different for one. The climate was one of the things that was destroyed. Because before the flood, we never had rain. It didn't exist.
Well, if you're trying to say that the flood was limited to a certain area,
right,
then it doesn't make sense that
all
flesh everywhere on the earth did not exist except in that area.
Right. Well, all
of even when God created the earth, he created it perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I know what your opinion is that the separation of landmass took place later.
Right.
I find that a great stretch, a lot of macro evolution that would have to take place.
we can speculate all we want, but scriptures don't tell us. What it does tell us is that it accomplished what God set it out to do, which was to destroy all flesh
within
that area, that he has been corrupted,
well,
which destroys.
Included in Colossians Colossians 1:20 as well.
I think so too.
Because there it speaks of reconciliation, and Satan himself is included in that. And so, you know, why wouldn't these others that are in Tartarus and so forth? So, I think they're all included here.
I think so too. I think so too. They'd have to be. Otherwise, God can't be all in all. The whole point that he's making is that God wiped out everything he had to wipe out.
Was the
go out of existence. That's the idea.
Or to cause God to curse him.
Right. Either way, it accomplishes what he sets it out to do.
Wow.
So that's probably the point of break.
Yeah,
when we start getting into the Tower of Babel, we can get into some pretty out there things, too. But the whole point is, though, I mean, as you're going through the book of Genesis and as you're getting more familiar with it, it's a history of failure everywhere. It's what it's a history of. Right. It's people behaving badly. It could be a soap opera. But it really is a history of failure. You know, very few areas have bright spots when you think about it.
And you know, like
Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night, guys.
All right. Good night.
What?